Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hoban Minute. This week is a very special episode. It's NoCo here in Colorado. The hemp industry is congregating and descending upon Colorado Springs and the Broadmoor. There's a bunch of great talks going on right now. Information about the hemp industry is available via the conference. And more importantly today, I'm joined by a very special guest. I'm not joined by my co-host, Bob Hoban. Instead, I'm joined by my predecessor, the former host of the Hoban Minute, Eric Singular. How are you today, Eric?
I'm doing real well. Pleasure to be back, man. Pleasure to be here with you.
It's good to have you in the episode. I know you've, in the studio, you know you've left some big shoes for me to fill. And it's good to have you in here to maybe talk a little bit one-on-one about what you've been up to, about the hemp industry. And just generally get a sense of kind of what this week means for the hemp space, and especially here in Colorado. So first thing I wanted to start with was kind of your background, right? You've been working, you know, with Bob Hoban. You've been a part of the Bob Hoban, let's say, ecosystem for a few years now. And it seems, you know, at least from looking into your background and kind of the various roles you've filled in that time frame, you're really focused on the hemp space. You know, I think that's a little different than myself. I tend to focus, or I come from kind of, you know, more the marijuana side of things, right? Having worked in the cannabis industry. And I think those are different perspectives, right? So what have you been doing since you stepped off the air at the Hoban Minute?
That's a big question, man. Part of the Bob Hoban ecosystem. That's a good way to put it. I have an immense amount of gratitude, both personally and professionally for Mr. Hoban, and of course for Halston as well.
Shout out to Halston.
Huge opportunities provided just by being in the radius of those two individuals, including the podcast here, and starting that a couple of years ago with them during the pandemic. Since walking away from the podcast, still been very deeply involved in the industrial hemp space. I think really when I walked away from the Hoban Minute, I started working with New Frontier Data as a senior market analyst, looking at kind of the hemp market across all different verticals, food, fiber, as well as cannabinoids. But I've still been involved in seed and genetics, and then more and more I've been getting involved in processing for fiber and grain as well. But you did bring up NoCo, and I think kind of the energy that I feel around this event, and especially around this congregation of hempsters descending upon Colorado Springs right now, is a little bit of a rebrand, a little bit of a shift in focus. You know, the event, this is the ninth annual NoCo Hemp Expo. The previous eight events, there's definitely been a strong focus, both in the programming, in the exhibitors, and in just the kind of general vibe of the show on cannabinoids, really starting with CBD kind of in those early years, shifting a little bit more to Delta 8, I'd say, over the last two or three years. The organizers of the event are really trying to push the message around industrial hemp and the focus of the show toward industrial hemp, so they really put a lot of energy and work into getting the biggest processors, the biggest farmers, the biggest movers and shakers in the true industrial hemp space on the show this year, demonstrating their products, whether it's hemp building materials, hemp foods, hemp animal bedding, what have you. That's really the what they want to build this year into the DNA of the event, so that moving on to 2024 and the 10th NoCo Hemp Expo, which will also be held at the Broadmoor, it really starts to become more of an industrial hemp show versus like a kind of a CBD show or a cannabinoid show like it's been.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, by and large, when you look at most of the hemp, you know, quote unquote trade show circuit in the United States, they do tend to focus on the cannabinoid piece, you know, and a lot of the content that actually we've been putting out here on the Hoban Minute over the last few months has been, you know, discussions with intoxicating cannabinoid producers that are working with, you know, cannabinoids derived from hemp or cannabis. And it's actually, you know, kind of this whole sector of the hemp industry that I feel like we maybe have been neglecting a little bit on this show. And it's, you know, the grain, the industrial building materials, the fiber. There's meaningful developments being made in all those areas. And I think hemp really has an opportunity to help take, you know, not just kind of those industries, but humanity as a whole forward and kind of into maybe a more sustainable model for just developing, you know, humanity and kind of what we're all doing. What are some of the most exciting developments that you've seen come out of, you know, the industrial side of the hemp industry?
Yeah, there's so many to count. It's kind of the blessing and the curse of hemp in a way. The, you know, some say 25,000, some say 50,000 different applications. Because when there's that much utility in one plant, in one crop, where do you focus? And, you know, I think focus has been, it's been a challenge in the hemp space. I think a lot of folks have tried to do probably too much, try to kind of touch every piece of the supply chain and kind of failed to focus on really building a competence in kind of one piece of that chain, in which there's more than enough wealth and value that can be created, you know, for any one entity. People look, I think, often to kind of the model of big agriculture, which is kind of owned by, you know, a handful of companies in the world, Cargill, ADM, BASF, and they have that vision for hemp. We want to be the ADM of industrial hemp. We want to be the BASF of hemp. And, you know, the reality is that takes centuries to build a company and a legacy in that way.
Do you think that mindset comes out of kind of the VC tech world of, you know, because when you say that, the ADM of hemp, right, it's like, oh, I hear the Uber of, you know, which is something that I think is a common phrase thrown around in Silicon Valley. And do you think that's kind of part of it? They just have these great aspirations and that's the way to maybe attract outside interest?
Yeah, and I think it actually stems from something even deeper, and that's that agriculture is tech. Big ag is really ag tech. And when you even look at something I thought was really interesting, you know, kind of putting on the lens of law a little bit, I was working with an intellectual property attorney looking at hemp genetics. And we were comparing, you know, what a seed purchase agreement for hemp seed for planting looks like compared to a contract for corn seed for planting. And what I thought was really interesting is that corn seed is sold on a licensing agreement to a farmer. So you're basically, the farmer is licensing a technology, they're not buying seed. So really the whole model in big ag has really become extreme intellectual property, ownership of really every piece of the puzzle related to the ag supply chain. And there is kind of a big tech mentality around ag as a whole. And I think that, you know, for people that want to raise money, those phrases, those buzz hype words, like, we're going to be the whatever of whatever.
Unicorn.
That's what tends to bring the capital. Although that's another place where hemp has a lot of picking up to do. And as we were talking about earlier today, you know, the entire VC funding space right now is down. No company is I think finding it really easy to raise capital. And, you know, the hemp space is dealing with that challenge as well.
Right, right. No, yeah, I think the capital markets everywhere are constricted. And then that, yeah, multiplies when you apply it to hemp and cannabis. And so, you know, you mentioned something interesting about kind of the fragmented nature of the hemp industry. And one thing that you are very good at, and one thing that, you know, a role I think that you've held and do currently held is as a communications director. You have a strong background in communicating and developing content. And, you know, our mutual friend Bob is actually at NoCo currently, and he had the keynote address today, and the title of that keynote address was Align the Message, Align the Industry. So what is a way that maybe the industry can start to align itself? Is it, you know, do the industrial building folks need to go and, you know, act more like they're part of, I mean, I don't know what that complex even looks like, the industrial, you know, construction complex. Do the natural foods folks need to go to, you know, Expo East and some of the, you know, CPG and kind of focus more on those lanes, or do they need to stay hemp, right? Is that helpful for them?
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. So it even shines through in the topic of Bob's keynote. It really comes down to focus, right? Focusing the industry, single message. And I think that's, you know, that's something that the industry needs to find as a whole. You know, what is our message? What are we trying to achieve from a policy perspective, from a legal perspective, and from a business use case perspective? One of the challenges I think that the NoCo Hemp Expo organizers have faced, and it's not a slight to them at all, but when you have, again, this plant with all these, all this utility and all these applications, what you have is people who are in the room for a million different reasons. And so it's very hard to bring everybody together under kind of a unifying banner, a unifying message, and find what that common thread really is. And so one of the challenges for NoCo has been that a lot of companies are finding that going to a hemp-centric event isn't a huge opportunity to conduct business. So it's become harder and harder to justify from a marketing budget perspective or event budget perspective, having a big presence at that event. To your point about a building materials company or a food company, they would have much more utility going to a big conference in that space where they can actually be this innovative new kid on the block, bringing something new to an industry that's been around for a long time, showcasing a really, really cool product that has ESG claims behind it, brings a sense of sustainability and regenerative, rather than being kind of in a room of, you know, hemp people who are already kind of hemp evangelists.
Right, right. No, yes, you know, essentially preaching to the choir, because you're absolutely correct. You know, they, these, we, I think, most of the attendees at NoCo 9, you know, were attendees at NoCo 8 and NoCo 7, right? And they've been around the block, if you will, and they've seen, they've met a lot of the same people, and now it's a bit of a congregation of the industry, and it's kind of a, an opportunity for these folks to catch up. But you're right, I think from a business perspective, it might be a little bit harder to get, you know, meaningful relationships developed with kind of this, this, again, small circle and kind of localized approach to hemp. Now, you mentioned three words. You said, you know, environment, sustainability, and regenerative. And I think, you know, most folks, when they hear environment, sustainability, they think of governance and ESG. ESG has been an interesting topic of late, both in cannabis and not in cannabis, just generally in the corporate world. We had the pleasure of speaking to Adam Bierman of MedMen not too long ago, and he mentioned, you know, how important the concept of ESG was to that brand as they developed early on. Now, you know, we won't get into the details of what happened to MedMen after the fact, but, you know, the ESG, I think, kind of core push or theory, right? The fact of that, you know, corporations need to be more environmentally conscious. They need to produce, you know, sustainability, and they need to practice governance that you know, does include and incorporate kind of an inclusive approach to their entire employee ecosystem, but stakeholder ecosystem, including, you know, anyone in the world essentially that interacts with that company. One thing that I think hemp has really good opportunity to help with on the ESG side of things, you know, is the environmental piece. And I know you've done some work with carbon capture credits and kind of some of the value that that hemp actually does have as a regenerative crop. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about, you know, what that carbon capture process looks like, the carbon credit process, and then how, you know, a hemp farmer or a hemp producer might be able to tap into kind of the carbon credit economy.
Yeah, big questions.
Huge question.
So I'm going to attack that question in two parts. And the first part, we're going to look at just agriculture and farming as a whole. So on average, there's about 180 million acres of corn and soy grown in the United States. And that becomes very exhaustive, both on soils, on kind of fertility systems, on water use. And so there's this large rise and movement for regenerative agriculture, which largely means putting other crops into the rotation. That way you get greater biodiversity, you get deeper tap roots from other plants that can help kind of regenerate the soil rather than just growing the same two crops on that crop rotation. So what we've seen a lot here in the Midwest in the last couple of years is the opportunity for hemp to come in as a rotational crop and really have a lot of on-farm benefits for the farming community. And largely that's, you know, lower fertilizer costs moving forward. And more and more we're starting to see data trickle in around what hemp can do both for a crop that precedes it and then what is the best crop to grow before hemp. And so just from that perspective, just that greater biodiversity on the farm, more crops in the rotation, there's huge utility in that, you know, both for the soil and for ultimately kind of a farmer's total revenue model.
So does that involve like, you know, you plant your corn and then maybe in the same field, then you're planting a hemp crop for the next harvest and then going back to corn?
Exactly. And usually a farmer, you know, is managing multiple fields and they're just looking at on a 4-year cycle, what crop can I keep following a crop with, right? And there are carbon credit platforms that have started to pay growers for introducing new crops. And that kind of takes us to the second part, which is let's talk about carbon that's sequestered in the hemp plant. This is a huge topic. This was probably the number one topic in NoCo, I would say, the last 2 years. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done before a carbon credit is ever really traded or generated from the production of industrial hemp. What we know is that when hemp grows, it sequesters carbon and it puts it, so atmospheric carbon, carbon dioxide, CO2, it sequesters that CO2 both in the soil, which all plants do to some degree, and it captures some CO2 in the plant biomass, the stock of the hemp plant, which can then be used as fiber for a number of different uses. All plants do this to some degree, but hemp just being such a robust crop and similar to bamboo, growing really tall within a matter of 2 or 3 months, it just has an enormous ability to suck up carbon. Where the carbon credit piece really comes in is whether or not you can take that stock and then turn that into a product. And if the product is long life, if it will exist for maybe more than 10 years, then there's an argument to be made for carbon that was actually removed from the carbon cycle by virtue of growing that plant and turning it into a product. The challenge with all of that is, one, you have to develop a product, which takes a lot of innovation. That's where a lot of folks in the hemp space are currently at, investing in R&D and bringing forward these products that would be disruptive in a number of different sectors. What you also need to validate that is an LCA, a life cycle assessment, usually done by a third-party group of material scientists, smart folks, who will look at something and really say, okay, over the lifetime of this product, is that carbon really captured? How long will the product last? There's a number of concerns that have to be addressed and analyzed in an LCA, and they're also really expensive, which is kind of brings us back to that people in the hemp industry need capital, and trying to do a number of LCAs across a lot of different products, you would rack up a pretty large price tag pretty quickly. So it'll be really interesting to see kind of who becomes the first mover in that space. And I think it was bolstered a little bit by a USDA grant that came out last year. It was a Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities through USDA. And they ended up awarding about $50 million to the hemp space specifically. They awarded another $1 billion to other agricultural projects. But $50 million for hemp specifically to start building a foundation upon which that kind of research that really validates the regenerative, the environmental, the sustainable, and ultimately the carbon conversation around hemp. So it'll be really interesting to see what those projects end up developing. And almost all of them were awarded through land-grant universities. So it'll have the stamp of the trusted folks in the ag world.
Right, right. Kind of legitimacy, if you will. No, that's interesting. I'm glad you kind of gave me that background, because frankly, I didn't realize that the carbon capture credit kind of economy or application, let's say, in the hemp space was still so novel. Because, you know, to your point, it was a large topic over the last few NoCos. It has been a large topic in the hemp space, I feel like, over the last few years. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if someone is able to accomplish that, get the LCA, and then ultimately, you know, is awarded kind of carbon credits. And then, you know, forgive my naivete here, but you know, there's an exchange, right? You then sell these credits to a Shell or a BP or someone that's producing massive amounts of carbon, and that helps them offset their footprint, essentially.
I would say, so without getting into the weeds, right, there's a lot of criticisms being thrown around about the carbon markets as they kind of exist currently. And
well, it's a crutch, you know, justifies bad behavior on the other end.
And if you want to get that perspective, you know, go and watch John Oliver's crucifixion kind of the voluntary carbon markets. But, you know, where I see the biggest utility for hemp really is when you look at all the major CPGs and they're all tracking against really ambitious 2030 sustainability goals. They have a commitment to reduce their carbon footprint. They have a commitment to get off single-use plastics. They have a commitment to decarbonize some of their supply chain. That's where I think hemp, and beyond hemp, it's plant-based solutions, nature-based technologies, are really going to play a major role. Because there's small ways in which they can achieve those goals. And if you think about the innovation that's occurring in sustainable packaging, so using hemp as a filler in plastics, and then you think about all the plastics that are used by a company like Coca-Cola in their packaging, that's a place where hemp could plug in, have a huge impact, just being a plant-based ingredient replacing a petroleum oil-based ingredient. And it wouldn't involve carbon credits per se, but you would be getting that big environmental impact, positive impact out of hemp, and you'd be doing that with some of the largest companies in the world who have already made those commitments and frankly are sitting around thinking, it's 2023, we only have 7 years, how are we going to get there? Those people are starting to pay way more attention to the hemp space, but really the whole plant-based innovation space, I think, increasingly.
Right. And a lot of those folks are beholden to more than just, you know, internal or external commitments. You know, there might even be regulations and laws in place forcing them to meet certain standards and requirements in the coming years. And, you know, that's always how I've thought of hemp as related to the environment, right? Not as this thing that's going to come along and just turn everything on its head, but rather, you know, an innovative and sustainable and new material that can be inserted with, you know, relatively low amounts of friction into existing industrial processes. You know, maybe Coca-Cola has to change out a few liners and you know, machines and their packing and filling stations. Obviously, I'm not an industrial controls or machine expert, so I don't know exactly what that would entail. But I imagine the lift would be a little bit lower than, you know, kind of this robust change the world message that we get a lot of the time from a lot of the hemp industry. I got one more question for you. And, you know, something that we've been working with a lot or on a lot lately is seed sales. So the DEA last year, they announced that, well, under the 2018 Farm Bill, you know, no cannabis seed, no marijuana seed, no hemp seed ever would have over 0.3% Delta-9 THC. Therefore, all seeds qualify as hemp. Now, this has had, you know, kind of large implications to the cannabis side of things. The marijuana side of things, the high THC side of things. We started to see, you know, Cookies, for example, launch the Cookie Seed Bank, and they're selling all their, you know, fantastic strains online. You can buy these seeds, and of course the seeds are sold as novelty souvenir products. Was there any sort of impact? Was there even, like, any sort of ripples made in the hemp space when, you know, when the DEA put out this letter? Because on the cannabis and marijuana side of things, it was like, oh my God, this bomb was dropped, right? But I don't know if the hemp industry particularly cared, because for them, they're like, well, yeah, you know, our seeds are hemp.
It's a fantastic question. And the timing of the question is actually really, serendipitous. So the majority of research that exists about, the presence of cannabinoids in hemp seed or cannabis seed exists as a virtue of the work that's been done by folks who have been trying to get hemp feed approved for animal feed. In addition, back in 2018, the FDA granted GRAS status, generally recognized as safe, to hemp hearts, hemp seed oil, and hemp protein powder. Okay. That was pushed through by Fresh Hemp Foods Manitoba Harvest, which is owned by Tilray. So there was a body of research that had to be put in front of FDA in order for them to grant that GRAS status to those hemp food ingredients. There was also there's also a convincing amount of research that the presence of THC is extremely low in hemp seed. We're talking 10 parts per million. And that's been the justification for why hemp grain should be able to be used as animal feed for cows, for chickens, what have you. But it's funny you ask this, because I was looking recently by virtue of kind of a question that came across my desk saying, hey, we've identified an issue with our grain processing, and we want to know whether or not there's a hemp seed out there that has a true zero amount of THC or CBD or any cannabinoid in the seed itself. And in doing, you know, going down the rabbit hole of that research, nobody really has explored that in any kind of really, really meaningful way. And it's a really interesting thought process, because obviously in the expression of the plant, whether it's a hemp plant or a marijuana plant, you're going to see that cannabinoid profile expressed when it's an actual plant. But you would assume that some of that would be carried through in the DNA, in the genetics of the seed itself. And I think we're at an interesting time where, because of issues like this DEA letter and then just kind of the innovation side, wanting to understand these ingredients more before they hit full-scale adoption into the big food world, we're going to start to see more research really on those. But like a lot of things in hemp, we just don't know very much, because cannabis as a whole has never really been studied the same way that everything else in the plant kingdom was put under the microscope over the last, you know, 50 years and through the Green Revolution and our explosion in understanding genetics and molecular biology in plants.
Right. And I'm sure as technology and understanding improves and increases, you know, we will identify ways to maybe even, you know, look at the genetic codes of a seed to really understand, you know, what ultimately it will look like as a mature plant. And hopefully then we can move away from, you know, these arbitrary legal distinctions where you have, you know, a group of senators that know nothing about agriculture or cannabis or anything like that, that just say, well, you know, 0.3% seems like a good low limit. That's not going to get any cows stoned as they eat their hemp seed feed.
Any cannabis genetic that came forward that had a true zero cannabinoid profile would have huge market potential in a number of different categories. And the really obvious low-hanging fruit one would be pharmaceutical and medical, because you need a control. And so far, to some degree, every cannabis genetic, even if it's an industrial hemp genetic, does have some minute presence of cannabinoids in it. So if a real true zero was to come forward, there'd be a lot of utility on that medical pharmaceutical side from a research perspective, but the amount of confidence that that could instill in big potential users of hemp, I think would be immense. If we could say this is a truly risk-free hemp plant and then resulting hemp food ingredient, hemp fiber, I think that would probably change the conversation a little bit around what is perceived still as kind of a high-risky new category and new space.
Got it. Well, folks, you heard it here first. I mean, that's the million-dollar idea, the business nugget that will drop on this episode, because I know some of the folks listening do like to tune in and see if there's any opportunities or market gaps available for them to tap into. And there you have it. Develop a true zero hemp seed. Eric, it's been a pleasure having you on today and chatting about the hemp industry. Where can folks find you, and any parting messages for our listeners today?
Yeah, you can find me pretty easily on LinkedIn. Eric Singular, that's a great way to reach me. I think that's probably the way. And then the only other thing I'll say is, you know, going to NoCo this week, really hoping that everybody, all the kind of hemp community, walks away from that event with a little bit more of a singular vision for what everybody wants. And I specifically say that because a piece of legislation actually just came out, was introduced by Senator Tester from Montana, and then another senator from Indiana. It was a bipartisan piece of legislation that would really change the way that industrial hemp is defined here in the United States and actually make it a lot easier for farmers to grow hemp. It would reduce a lot of the regulatory burden that is placed on farmers when they want to grow a hemp crop. So while there's a lot of kind of internal disagreements in the hemp industry and between the hemp community around what is needed to move the industry forward, I'm hoping this event, which does bring everybody into a room, which may not offer all the business opportunities that a Expo West, a supply side, a non-woven conference might bring. That's the real opportunity when you get all of those stakeholders and supply chain operators together, is aligning that message. So, you know, again, big credit to Mr. Hoban for being there today and spreading that message, because we know that that's what Bob is really good at.
Yep. Aligning the industry and aligning the message for sure. And we do have a new farm bill that should be hitting the streets at some point this year. So it's a big year for hemp. And it's going to be more important than ever for the industry to align itself and become unified. Eric, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And, as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.